step right up here. It's This Week in Mormons. Come on down, everyone.
Well, elephants and woozles, heffalumps and woozles.
That's right, everybody. Come on down here and join us for a lovely day.
See the fatted lady for a dollar.
I don't know what we're doing.
I can't even keep going.
I feel like we just created the worst carnival of all time. It's a fat lady and a heffalump and woozle from Winnie the Pooh, and that's all anybody gets to see here.
I love the heffalumps. I mean, come on.
How much would you pay, Jeff, to see the fatted lady?
$2. I recall $2. A couple of years ago at the Orange County Fair, sometimes they have like just a giant horse, you know, just a horse that for some reason is substantially just bigger than a regular horse would be.
Oh, yeah. We call those big horses.
But I don't mean like just a Clydesdale or something. I mean, it's just a mammoth, like a giant horse. But they'd have it in a little shed and you're supposed to pay a buck and go in, you know, past the blocking wall and go see it. I snuck through the back door and looked at it. It was large and I did not pay a dollar.
Well,
that's all.
What? So you saw it? You stole a peek?
I stole a peek to save a buck, because I'm cheap.
Jeff, I hope that comes out in your next Bishop's interview. I want you to confess that just to tell the story.
It's been like 4 years. Come on, man.
Does not matter. Jeff, you've got to air this dirty laundry and get it all off your chest. I can tell this is bothering you.
It's really been weighing on me for a very long time. Well said, sir.
Well, that's all right. You know, if this were a Catholic church, I would absolve you of this sin. But it's not. You have to go to the Father, per se, and be absolved.
Okay. Speaking of Catholics, by the way, Time magazine just announced that Pope Francis is the person of the year.
All right.
Yeah.
He beat Obama.
Well, that wasn't very hard to do. In fact, on MSN's website, the pictures they show to tease you for who could be the person of the year are Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Edward Snowden, Miley Cyrus, and the Pope. Now, I don't want to be a jerk here, but I don't feel like Miley Cyrus and Pope Francis really need to share the same, you know.
Hey, Miley Cyrus carried the spotlight for a number of weeks.
She did, but does that make her the person of the year? Was she a game changer in any way?
Is that not the qualifier?
No, being
now, Snowden I could see as person of the year.
Sure. Jeff Bezos, I don't really know.
That man put his life on the line to try and do some craziness.
So you
and then
feel
Pope Francis's big move was just that he realized the Catholic Church was being weird. That was his play.
To our Catholic listeners, we love you.
Why is Paul Walker not man of the year?
You know,
he died.
You know,
we give dead people these.
The sad thing about Paul Walker is Fast and Furious 6 just came out on Blu-ray and DVD this week. And obviously, I mean, there's nothing they could do about this. This is life. But it was kind of sad as I've been Christmas shopping to see all these displays set up with all, you know, the whole cardboard display with Fast and Furious 6 and Paul Walker everywhere, TV ads for the movie. There's nothing that can be done. You can't fault anybody, but it's rather unfortunate timing in the wake of everything. It's just kind of sad.
Yeah, for them to have to capitalize on the dead man.
Well, I don't think they're trying to capitalize. I'm sure they were just like, oh, great. But
trying to make money on his dead image.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, in the world of retail, as you know, Al, the DVDs were already manufactured and probably shipped and even potentially sitting in the stores until they were able to be put up as a floor display. So it's not like they just pushed it
ahead. Those savage profiteers. They said, oh, you know who's dead? Let's sell that stuff. This is like every B.B. King album that I've seen advertised to me lately. This is every Beatles album that's re-released for the third time.
Did I miss something? Did B.B. King die?
Yeah, B.B. King's dead.
No, B.B. King's alive, dude.
No, there's no way.
Yeah, B.B. King's still around. Look it up.
Going on Wikipedia.
Go ahead.
Let me use Miles Davis then as this example. It's like Miles Davis. He's born in 1925, Jeff. Nobody's lived this long.
Yeah, Miles Davis is actually, no one has lived. I think my grandma was born in 1925. She's still alive.
Well, there he is. So, well, all right. B.B. King is alive. He's just really fat and old.
Well, the first adjective you used has been the case for decades.
King performed his debut album of Rapper.
Yes.
Oh, he performed on the debut album.
Good.
Of Big Crit, who hails from Mississippi.
Why are you making fun of B.B. King? He's a national treasure. Come on.
And Morgan Freeman narrated a documentary about B.B. King.
Okay. Yeah. Speaking.
No, here's my thing with B.B. King. I like B.B. King's music, but one time I was helping work the Blues and Jazz Festival in Kansas City, and B.B. King came, and we had to do all these arrangements to get him in late at night to do this thing, and he was a jerk. He was not nice to this 15-year-old young man driving the golf cart. He was a diva. A diva.
A diva, you say? Okay.
I still do jam to his tunes, though.
By the way, speaking of Twitter, this was a great thing. So, in the past week...
Hold on. Before you get there, no one was speaking of Twitter, Jeff.
I am speaking of Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman.
Speaking of Twitter... Go on.
This is what happens when I'm partially reading something while I talk.
I feel like you're trying, like you're luring me in to make out with me. You're like, oh, that's funny. Speaking of making out.
No.
Like I didn't say anything about
what
it.
What does that
doing?
Have to do with making out? Is this all your mind is
your
on?
Your hands.
No side boob.
Speaking of it being hot in here, huh? I'm like, what? Jeff. This is all a trap.
Okay, so anyway, I'm not sure yet if I don't believe this is Morgan Freeman's official Twitter account, but as you know, Nelson Mandela passed away this past week, which is huge international news. Nelson Mandela, great man.
Was he a communist?
Who cares? More on that later. Interesting though, as a side note, I was at the American Museum of African Art on Saturday, and they'd set up very quickly, because it was like only a day or two later, a quick little Mandela exhibit and a memory book where people could write their thoughts about Nelson Mandela, and they would actually send it to Nelson Mandela's family. And it was pretty impressive to see the line of people who were doing this of all races, and people taking pictures of themselves, you know, with the pen while signing the book. Everything. I felt like it was a good moment for world unity. That's all. But on to the Twitter thing. So a lot of people posted pictures of Morgan Freeman when Nelson Mandela died. They said RIP Nelson Mandela with a picture of Morgan Freeman. And so Morgan Freeman responded and just said, hey, I'm still alive, you idiots. Please stop confusing me with Nelson Mandela.
He did not say idiots.
No, he did not say idiots. Now, the jury's out whether this is actually his legitimate account, and I'm not going to instantly assume it is, but it's funny. That's all. He's not Nelson Mandela, idiots.
Jeff, I feel like that was a stretch. No one was speaking anything about this.
Well, you said Morgan Freeman. You did say Morgan Freeman. And so the thoughts of the man were in my heart.
And you led us to a tweet where he swears at us. No, that account was suspended. That is certainly not his account.
Darn it all. I wish it were real. It's like the Lord Voldemort account and the Professor Snape account. Apparently not
those
real.
Those guys aren't real.
Yeah, which is really depressing because I thought they were legit, especially because the Dark Lord dies in the end, and there he is tweeting.
Sometimes, there are some things about you that I loathe at times. One... One of those things is your preoccupation with Harry Potter and your desire for it to be real. Jeff, it's all fake.
Anywho, other than that, life is magical. I hope your life is magical.
It is. It's nice.
Because we know that the us chattering for no reason in the beginning of the show is controversial.
No, it's not controversial. It's our dang show. We do what we want.
We do what we want.
We do. Yeah, so it snowed out here. I went and got my snowboard out of storage, and I'm excited to go snow. That's what's going on in my life.
It snowed here, too, which doesn't happen a ton in D.C. So it was.
That's not true. It happens a ton in D.C.
No, it doesn't. And if it does, it doesn't usually stick around. It might snow in the morning, and it's already gone by the afternoon, that kind of thing. But as I look out right now.
Jeff, that is literally a falsehood.
That is not a falsehood.
It snows a lot in D.C.,
yeah, okay. Why would you know this? I've lived here for 3 years. Come on, son.
I feel like even with your living there 3 years, I've still been in D.C. more than you.
Unless the one time you were hanging out here was during Snowpocalypse, in which case, perhaps, that's maybe why you feel the way you feel.
Every year I travel there in winter, and every year there's easily a foot of snow on the
Every ground. Year you travel here in winter, I don't recall hosting you at any point from
No, I don't call
December
you every time,
March.
Jeff.
You come here and you don't even tell me?
I travel through. Yes.
You're a bad person.
But I love you.
I thought we were best friends. We just talked about this before we started recording.
We should have recorded it so I could have known.
Why do I put up with this?
Because of love.
I want out. I can't do it anymore.
So, Jeff, is your marriage well?
Yeah,
you and the wife?
No, marriage is...
Are you guys good?
Marriage is great. Stoked to go home in a little over a week for Christmas. That's going to be good. It's going to be nice.
Wait, do you still call home your mother's house even after being married now almost a year?
It's always home, sure.
Is it?
And when
is
I
home not what you and your wife have built?
And when I refer, well, as the Tabernacle Choir said it, home is a special kind of feeling. They might actually say love is a special kind. I'm not sure what they actually said. But no, when I was thinking of home, I just mean just Southern California in general, I regard as home. And it's nice to go back. I haven't really been since the wedding, so I'm looking forward to being home.
Again, that's not true. You went home in the middle of this year.
No, I haven't been home. When have I gone home?
Since the wedding, you haven't been home?
Well, we had that another...
Ah-ha.
No, we had an open house 3 weeks later, but that hardly counts.
Ah-ha, Jeff.
Three Aha. weeks later. So I have not been home in all that time. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be nice. That's all. It's good. Be happy for me. Thank you.
No, I could never be happy for you going home to, quote-unquote, Orange County.
In other news, I went to Cafe Rio yesterday. Amazing.
That land is a desert.
No, actually, Utah's a desert, technically. It is the edge of the Great Basin and the Rocky Mountains.
All right, that's fair. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Mormon news.
I'm done mocking you. I'm done mocking
you. No, you're not. It's going to happen at some point during the rest of the show.
No, I'm serious. I'm done. I'm done mocking you.
It's a given, and I still love you. It's okay. I am like the battered wife. You may say as you will.
And it's true.
And I will just love you either way.
It's a good relationship. I like how
top news. All right, everyone. So the biggest news this week, definitely our biggest story. Many of you might have noticed, hopefully you saw it, at our Facebook page at facebook.com/thisweekinmormons. The church in its quest now.
Is this about the Wiz?
I wish it were about the Wiz. We'll get to that, though. As you know, the church has been sort of pushing some more articles of late that deal with some of the more difficult issues, we could call them, in the church's history. And so this latest one to pop up here is race and the priesthood. They just add sections underneath the topic hierarchy, LDS.org. But they've actually published an entire article explaining the history of priesthood extension within the church and its relationship to race. So it's very nice, I think, that they are actually addressing this just head on. I think there's still some more work to be done, but this is very big news. I mean, if you even search for Mormon news this week, this is the biggest thing you're going to find by far.
So this has been a document that many people have been calling for a long time.
Yeah.
So this is a much bigger deal than just another page on LDS.org, because this acknowledges sort of the it nods to the fact that this maybe shouldn't have happened. Right, that there should not have necessarily been a ban on this. The last paragraph in the first section there, it says, in 1852, President Brigham Young publicly announced that men of black African descent could no longer be ordained to the priesthood. The previous couple of paragraphs, it talks about how, that they were giving blacks the priesthood. Elijah Abel participated in temple ceremonies in Kirtland. You know, they know that there were black men that had the priesthood.
That's true.
And then it says, President Young put a ban on it. Thereafter, blacks continued to join the church through baptism, receiving the gift of the Holy Ghost. Following the death of Brigham Young, subsequent church presidents restricted blacks from receiving the temple endowment or being married in the temple. Over time, church leaders and members advanced many theories to explain the priesthood and temple restrictions. None of these explanations is accepted today as official church doctrine. So the church is saying none of these sort of ideas are at all like the reason why. You know, they don't know why. They're not sure why President Young decided that was not okay, especially after during Joseph Smith's time, there were, in fact, blacks that were participating in the temple and doing that stuff. I've seen a lot of suggestions just around like maybe President Young was in fact racist. We don't know. There's a lot of evidence that goes either way, but like what this says to me is that we have in the history of our church, much as President Uchtdorf suggested in his last talk, we have prophets and we have leaders who are, you're kind of tasked with interpreting doctrine based on your own social norms or views and trying to put that into reality. And sometimes they don't do it exactly right. Sometimes they don't translate that into doctrine correctly, and the Lord has to come along and fix it.
Yeah.
Which the church is saying is the case here, right?
Well, and that's the interesting way of looking at it. You could very much look at it as people were racist and they followed their own, their own personalities, their own desires, which is often the case. But I like, Al, that you said that perhaps their own weakness, their own frailty as men led them to misinterpret the Lord's will, which could also very well be the, and again, this is just us postulating, of course, but
yeah,
but I like that. That's an interesting way of looking at things that to do it that way. And also there is a lot of background to consider. I mean, of course the church was restored, and it explains this in another paragraph. Of course, racial culture was very contentious during the time of the church's restoration. I mean, citizenship in the initial era of the United States was limited solely to, white landowning men. Basically, yeah. And that was it. So, of course, stuff developed over time. And one of the big issues the church faced was as the church grew and gained converts, and especially in slave states like Missouri, for example, and elsewhere in the South, when those people moved to Utah and more converts came along, the Utah Territory was faced with addressing an issue of slavery. Now, we don't know if Brigham Young officially used that in any of his rationale in denying blacks the priesthood, if he thought it could be an issue of, I mean, think about it, because what if you were a slave to somebody and then you both have the priesthood, and what if you, the slave, were called as like your owner's elders quorum president? You could obviously see problems with that, despite it being an unjust system, but you know what I'm saying?
So, hello, Bishop.
Exactly. So there might have been issues there might not have been, but I do like that the church is categorically saying, while some of these might have affected things, none of these are the official doctrine of the church. I mean, lots of things came together to create this policy that I do think it's interesting that it lasted for as long as it did. I mean, well after the Civil War and the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution, Jim Crow laws were still a problem for a long time. It really does seem that it coincided with not the immediate aftermath, of course, but in the wake of stronger civil rights legislation in the 1960s in the United States. And also, of course, at this point, the church was not as much of a global body for this initial stretch. So,
well, and you think about it, I mean, it was a simple decision that led us down a path that then, I mean, it was easier to pretend like it wasn't a problem than to fix, right? I mean, put yourself in the shoes of a prophet in the 1920s or 1930s. I mean, you're going to choose not to think about that, because then all of a sudden it becomes this big public outcry because we've already gone down this road, which President Kimball faced when he received this revelation and went to go fix what had been done in the church. There were men, I mean, much as we've talked about on here with other instances, but there were men that said, I will, if this is what you're saying, this is not the true church. If blacks receive the priesthood, I'm leaving, I'm out, I'm right. Done. You're not receiving revelation, you're just buckling to social pressures and all this sort of rhetoric around it. But still he had to, sort of go and fix it and deal with that aftermath, which was not a popular decision, I'm sure, among some circles. And so there's a lot of reason to just ignore it throughout the years, which I'm guessing was sort of the case.
And it's interesting to me, and of course, we can never understand parts of this, but the fact that other previous prophets had inquired about it and sought to end it, but received negative inspiration, especially President McKay. And we find that the dropping of the ban of the priesthood very much, I feel like, coincides with the internationalization of the church. For better or worse, we were more of an American church leading up into the 1960s for the most part. There was international membership, but it was negligible, right? But as the international membership of the church grew, so grew the need to offer up temples to the saints. And President McKay went through an issue where they were trying to organize church units in South Africa, which of course has a strong white colonial history, but a majority of black people there. And one of the initial steps President McKay took was to reverse a policy that had required prospective priesthood holders to trace their lineage, regardless of how they looked, quote unquote, but to trace their lineage out of Africa. He actually got rid of that policy and said, we don't need to have these people have to dig through their genealogy just to prove to us that they're somehow worthy to have the priesthood. And that was a big step. And then it was, as this article also mentions, when the church was facing the construction of a temple in Brazil, which was 1975, they announced the Sao Paulo temple. This was much different because I love this part in the article that there were many faithful black and mixed ancestry Mormons who had contributed a whole lot into the construction of the temple. And Brazil was a lot different than the U.S. The U.S. had been, and South Africa were racist countries for a very long time and still struggle with those things, but by law, whereas Brazil had been much more integrated, where white, black, Brazilians, people of different heritage are just the norm in that country. And so it also, there were not those cultural and perhaps legal barriers. And so these things, of course, precipitated looking for it and looking for answers.
Yeah.
And I think...
Interesting. I mean, the most exciting thing about this is that the church is discussing it. They're being open about some of their not-so-glamorous history and kind of facing it head-on. So it's good.
Yeah. And I like that Elder McConkie, you know, Elder McConkie provides us one of the best insights on this because he himself had said previously that priesthood would not be extended to black members of the church. And then he spoke after the fact and just said, look, this is new light and knowledge, and I was speaking with limited understanding, which is an important lesson for all of us because anything can change with revelation.
It's true. It's very true.
You know, it's my one potential hang up with this, and it's not really a hang up. It's just that, like you referenced President Uchtdorf earlier.
Yep.
Those remarks were great. That was kind of a watershed moment in the church. But are we going to find ourselves on a slippery slope with members of the church who want to maybe cherry pick their way through discipleship now and with continuing to perhaps disavow practices in the church's past? Are we therefore increasing the perception of fallibility, you know, among the leadership of the church? And so at what point do we risk having a tipping point where people can just say, well, I personally don't believe that what the prophet is telling me is divine counsel, and so why should I follow it? You know, if it's just going to be overturned in a decade, right? This is me.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a danger of that, right? I think there's a risk of people starting to, maybe trust less. The thing with a lot of this, though, like counsel on how to live our lives, we've seen very little, you know, very, very rarely, except for,
that's
if
true.
I may, the caffeine thing, where they go back and say, no, you can do that.
They've never said you can't have soda for the
life. I'd be very disappointed if all of a sudden, you know, like I wait all this time, I get married, then the prophet comes back and says, oh, yeah, actually, now that I think about it, you can have sex whenever you want. You don't have to wait. I'd be like, oh, come on, man.
Really? So you would demean the wonderful experience you've had with your now wife because you lament that you were not able to
hit that person previously. Who has no wife? Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure that anyone who's Al's future wife will love the notion that he will regret not being able to fool around before having wonderful, unique one-on-one experiences with you. Congratulations,
right.
Al's future wife.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And so,
very lucky.
You know, this idea though, like I don't think we'll ever see the prophet come out and say, "Oh yeah, you know that thing that's making your life really good? Don't worry about that anymore." Like, it's not. I mean, doctrinal. You know, this guy can, or this person can be a member of the church. This person can hold the priesthood. This person can that. This person can that. I think that's a little bit different than, you should honor your father and mother. You
right.
should have faith. You should, you know, like the doctrine that is taught from the prophet and the apostles is not, I mean, it's not hard, controversial doctrine.
Well,
it's just like how to live your life better.
I think you could see, there's policy and there are principles. And, you know, things of policy might change, but the overall principles of how to live our lives are largely going to stay the same. We will change the language on how we discuss achieving those goals, but it's going to be the same general idea all the time. So, yeah. But
so true, man.
Big news.
All right. Well, the big news that I thought you were going to talk about is The Wiz.
Tell us about The Wiz, Al.
It's a Brazilian, this dude that served a mission in Brazil, went back, and has made billions there.
You are in.
Changed his middle name to Wizard.
Apparently you did not read it. He's an actual Brazilian who served his mission in Portugal. So.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, Portugal. Well, so he speaks Portuguese and went back there. He's not an actual Brazilian, is he?
Yeah, he's a Brazilian, yo.
I don't believe that's true.
Okay.
Oh, maybe it is. Anyway, he legally changed his middle name to Wizard.
I think it's his last name.
Like an idiot.
Carlos Wizard.
Yeah.
So strange.
Carlos Wizard Martins is a billionaire worth lots of whatever that country's currency is. And he's done it all in teaching people how to speak English easily. And now he's opening up. Well, so there was an article in Forbes on him. And I just had to laugh that our poor Mormon representation is some douchebag that's calling himself The Wiz.
I would legally change my name to Wizard.
If you were a billionaire?
If I were a billionaire, I'd do whatever I want.
The man's been a very successful businessman. He has like real estate, all these other investments. He's done very well for himself.
Well, he's
and he married a woman, so I mean he's doing all this stuff, and then he legally gives himself the name Wizard, which I think he did after he was married, because no woman, and I defy you to find me a decent woman who would marry a man who named himself The Wiz.
Now, does he actually go by The Wiz, or is that just you?
Well, his name is Carlos Wizard Martins, Jeff. What would you call
him? I mean, does
he
actually walk around?
If he came and said, hey, guys, would you say, hello, Mr. Wizard Martins?
I would love to meet Mr. Wizard. Oh, that science guy from when I was a kid. Mr. Wizard was great.
I see him as The Wiz. That's what I see.
So The Wiz more formally comes from you as a colloquialism that he perhaps does not appropriate for himself.
Right. It's a throwback to that great Seinfeld episode.
Or to the amazing Joel Schumacher directed film starring Donna Ross.
No, do you know what I'm talking about? That Seinfeld episode where they
No, when you say The Wiz, I think of the musical. I think of the Blaxploitation era translation of The Wizard of Oz into 1970s New York. The Wiz.
Oh, no, it's right here, Jeff.
Diana Ross. Thank you. Diana Ross, Michael Jackson.
No, I'm talking about the Elaine's dating a guy, and then she sees him in a commercial on TV where he works for a mattress factory selling things, and he's The Wiz.
Isn't that the guy who played...
It's The Wiz.
Elaine is in love with The Wiz guy. Well, that was exciting. Isn't that that's the
go,
guy?
Jeff.
That's the guy who was on The Adventures of Pete and Pete. That was what's his name? Artie? Artie, the strongest man in the world. Isn't that the same dude?
I have no idea what you're saying.
Have you never seen The Adventures of Pete and Pete?
No.
It is a Nickelodeon treasure.
Man, you had such a weird childhood.
I had a normal suburban childhood. You're the one who grew up milking cows and fixing motherboards at the same time in the sticks. I mean, for goodness sake, I don't try to equate your childhood to normal. You were homeschooled. You never even graduated from college. You've never done anything.
I did graduate from college.
Did you, though? Did you really?
Yeah. I just fake graduated from everything else.
Uh-huh.
It worked good.
Yeah.
Hey, did you see the Christmas devotional on Sunday, Jeff?
I caught it. Yeah. We watched it. It was okay. It was good. Yeah.
But it was weird. It was weird having the smattering of people not having our first presidency.
Okay, can I actually let me speak with candor about this, I guess.
Go on.
I didn't like it.
Ah! Jeff, there was a woman that spoke. You should be excited.
Here's the thing. It's like I tell myself it was fine and I liked it because I feel like I need to. It's a good spiritual thing. And overall, yeah, it was good and I enjoyed the messages that were shared and I love the beautiful music played by the Tabernacle Choir and the orchestra at Temple Square. That stuff is terrific.
They did great.
They do, and that's one of the biggest reasons I love the devotional. But the new format for me was just strange. I mean,
the new format meaning not the first presidency.
I don't care if it seems exclusive. I like it being the first presidency Christmas devotional. I like the idea of the.
We don't get to hear from them very often. I feel like it's good.
I like the idea of the big three up top saying, "Hey, it's been a good year as a church. Let's hear together, we who are running Christ's church here on the earth. We are here to speak to you about the nature of Christmas." So it was.
Bring a torch, Jeanette Isabella. Bring a torch.
I don't know. So you didn't. I mean, the fact that President Monson was the first speaker, but it was like one of his close of conference addresses where it was just a, "Hey, everybody, Christmas is great. What a good time. Thanks for all being here." Passive voice, folksy anecdote. 5 minutes later, he's done. And then that was it from President Monson. And then no other members of the first presidency even spoke. I understand they wanted to extend it and broaden the appeal to others, but it's not like they had to just basically just take them all away. I mean, President Uchtdorf merely conducted. President Eyring just sat there and just got to hang out the whole time. And then we had the primary woman spoke, which was fine, I guess. And... because it's primary, it's good for the kids to listen and feel the spirit of Christmas. And Utter Rasband was good. And Utter Nelson was pretty good, though when he started doing the videos.
He loves, man, that guy is just a PowerPoint rocker. I feel like if he ever discovered Prezi, it would be game over. Like if Nelson knew about Prezi, that would be every single talk. And we'd be like, here we go. Everybody hang on to your britches. We're about to get motion sickness.
The video is where he lost me, where he as he's talking, you suddenly see a primary class. One of our Twitter followers said maybe it's his grandchildren or great-grandchildren. Who knows? Whatever. But he's just awkwardly sitting in a room, basically like, sing to me, children, while they sing to him. I just wanted to see President Eyring get up there and choke up with some wonderful tale that had something to do with, you know,
yeah, just
Christmas.
Give us Christmas stories, man. That's all we're looking for.
I just wanted Christmas stories and the nature of Christmas. And this might sound, I guess, strange in a way. Of course, we talked about the Savior, but I felt like it broadened out so much that it just felt basically just general conference. Just live a good life and follow Christ, everybody, and that's fine. But I like it when it is when we have Christmas-focused talks about the birth of the Savior and the meridian of time and all these things that are going on. I enjoy that. I look forward to it every year, and I felt like I was deprived of it this year. How did
you were deprived.
Okay, well, I'm just being honest. This is just candor, okay? I'm just being honest with my feelings.
All right, no, I can respect that.
How did you feel about it?
Yeah, I love the music. I have such a hard time with, like, the primary-centric discussions that even happen in conference, which are, I mean... granted, they're built a little bit for the younger crowd.
It's a waste of airtime for the kids. Come on.
Yeah, they're sleeping anyway. They don't want to be there.
Well, when I was a child, I looked forward to being. It's like, do we start having primary talks? It's like we have the adult session of state conference for a reason. I looked forward to these things. Like, hey, when I'm older, I'll appreciate this more. So I'm going to stay good so I can watch it.
Right, stay exclusionary. Yes,
exactly. Make it like an exclusive club so that way I feel like I can get in.
Man, the music is just phenomenal, which I'd say 90% of the value that I get out of that night is the music.
I'll agree with
that. If they just played music the whole time, I'd be happy.
I agree with that. That's my favorite thing.
And then, I mean, like if the first presidency each gave like a 6-minute, let me just get up, share a quick story and bear a testimony, I would be just thrilled. I would be ecstatic. But... I was listening to, on my phone as I came home. I landed after it had already ended, and so I listened to it on the train ride in. And so I just heard President Nelson or Elder Nelson using all of these videos and was laughing to myself. Every conference too, he has that little he'll do that little video presentation that goes along with it. On it goes.
I wonder how he did they draw straws? I mean, of all of the brethren, I wonder why he was the one selected.
No, for sure, everybody owes him a favor, man. For sure. That guy's got to be like the mafia boss. And he's just like, oh, Christmas devotional. I wonder who gets to speak at that. And everybody kind of looks down at their feet and they say, you do, sir. You do.
So what you're saying is, in all reality, Elder Nelson probably actually owns the car dealerships that Elder Ballard used to run.
Oh, that's well. Not, I wouldn't say own, but he collects a protection fee.
Yeah, there we go. Exactly. He keeps, you know.
He's like, hey, I'm sorry. If you don't make the payment, there might be a fire in your establishment.
And because, as we know, State Street in Utah, in Salt Lake Valley, is one of the prettiest streets in America. So it's important that we keep it looking wonderful.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, too. That was All right, what else we got?
That was a,
keep moving.
That was a, that was a joke. Also, at the conference center over the weekend or the other day, we had the Latino program, the church's annual Christmas Latino program called Ven a mi casa esta Navidad, which means...
Did we have apostles speaking bad Spanish?
I don't think... Well, if some many of them know it. I don't think so. I feel like it's more of a cultural celebration. That's all. So, anyways, it happened.
It's just an excuse to eat tamales.
There we go. So, anyway, it's a 90-minute holiday celebration of dance and song. It's entirely in Spanish. Obviously, the performers are from all over Latin America, from Mexico all the way down to Tierra del Fuego, perhaps. And they stage it. They dance. They sing. They're happy. They say, hey, I'm a Latino in Utah, and I'm not going anywhere. So that happened. For anyone who saw it, I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure it's terrific. I should go to celebrate my Mexican ancestry, be a part
of
it.
Was it on LDS.org, El Mundo?
What?
I don't know. I just feel like there should be a Spanish BYU TV channel.
If there were a Spanish, I wonder if there is a Spanish language website. I'm sure you can change the language. What happens if I put SUD.org? Will that take me to a Spanish website for the church? Nope, it's available from GoDaddy. Thank you.
Get it!
Because that's LDS in Spanish, S-U-D, Santos de los Últimos Días is what it's called. We should get it. That'd be sweet. What are you laughing at?
Right.
Yes, I'm that pretentious. I'm the pretentious guy that whenever I see stuff in its native language, I go out of my way to use my accent. Like I say, when I'm in an Italian restaurant, I say, yeah, so I love this. Does this pizza come with mozzarella? Is that what it has? And some bruschetta.
Is that you? Is that
and some
Jeff,
bruschetta?
Really,
and then I go to the.
And your wife shakes her head. I mean, every hashtag she sends out is hashtag SMH. She just hates being with you.
You probably wish Danielle were here right now so she could join forces with you and just batter.
That was you, you and your wife, or your wife and I. I feel like are the only force that could defeat you in this world.
No one can defeat me in this world. I'm better than that.
All right, that's fine.
Dark wizard. Come on,
dark wizard people.
Obviously.
Hey, so there was a some of the other stuff going on. Let's talk about this BYU student making a documentary of himself.
Do we love him or do we hate him?
So he's running a Kickstarter right now.
Oh.
And he's he's raised the money. He's done it. He's raised the money to make a documentary about him trying to get engaged in the next 6 months.
What's he? Hold on, I'm confused. What's he raising money for? Because I believe he's already filmed stuff. He talks in the article as if he has done filming. Does he just need Kickstarter money to edit it and stuff? Maybe? I don't know. Whatever.
I don't know. He needed $3,000. Okay. He needed $3,000. And so he was going to document his efforts to find love.
Yay!
And Jeff, do you think this is stupid or brilliant?
I will say when I first saw the headline, I naturally became judgmental very quickly.
And well, that's just you.
Yes.
You're an angry elf.
I'm an angry dark lord. And then as I read it, though, I still think it's kind of dumb, but I appreciate that he seems to be taking it seriously as an examination of the bubble of Provo dating and how different it is from other dating scenarios. But I also feel like it's just an attention grabber. I mean, what's he trying?
No, it totally is. Yeah. I mean, it's an easy drive at getting some cheap likes, some cheap views, and maybe his woman will see this and fall in love with him through here.
If I find
much like the Mormon Bachelorette,
if I find out that he's secretly engaged to Natalie Crofts, the author of the article for KSL, I'm going to be sorely upset.
Oh my gosh, we will be livid. Well, so yeah, props to, I'm going to say props to him for like, if nothing else, just having this goofy documentary about him failing at love, which I'm sure is what, I mean, it's like a lifestyle video for Provo, which is sort of awful, but kind of entertaining to me. So yeah. I'm optimistic that he will not find love and it will be entertaining to me. If he does find love, I will hate him.
Al, you've been approached to be on dating shows before. You have no one to blame but yourself.
the dating shows would have fixed everything.
Obviously, you'd be a national treasure.
I could have been the hillbilly hick.
Only then would you have enough power to defeat me.
Dude, that's still, man, that would have been the worst. Oh my gosh, it would have been bad.
It would have been good for the podcast. Thanks for thinking of our business. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it would have been incredible for the podcast. Bad for the Mormon church and my relationship with Jesus.
Good for the Mormon church. Yeah, maybe bad for your relationship with Jesus. Speaking of documentaries, though, quickly, TLC just started airing Breaking the Faith. Of course, there's...
That's the story about a Mormon that's a meth... he makes... meth, right?
Yeah.
And then sells it, and then he goes up against Tuco. This is Breaking the Faith.
Well, he sells the meth to finance his mission.
Ah, yes.
And then his mission...
It's for the Lord, and then he finances other missionaries.
And then his mission president... And then he tries to take on the mission president with the goal of eventually presiding over the mission.
This is like a Pakumeni sort of flee to the Northland in Third Nephi type of situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of the... Thank you, good Pakumeni reference. We don't get many of those. Anyway, real quick, Breaking the Faith, it premiered on TLC, and anything on TLC at this point I take with a grain of salt. And the media will surely cover this the wrong way and just talk about it being strictly about Mormons. But we're talking about members of the Fundamentalist Church, so I'm sure they live down there in, you know, Kanab and that neck of the woods in Colorado City and all that. But a handful
in
of...
Kanab,
which is Elder Holland's hometown. What up? So this follows a group of kids who have left the FLDS Church and have gone to... they go to Salt Lake City and they see what happens. It sounds a lot like Breaking Amish. Honestly, it sounds like the same idea. And they meet kids. Some of the quotes, though, from the show are terrific, where they say, like, Lisa refers to a normal girl in the singles ward in Salt Lake City. Lisa seems pretty nice. She's really sweet. But Uncle Warren, this is Warren Jeffs, mind you, Uncle Warren has taught us that the abominable ones will welcome us with open arms, and then they'll corrupt us after.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah,
that would be my move if I was dating a woman with a unibrow. I'd be like, hey, come on in here. Then let's shave that unibrow.
It makes you wonder if they have the purer faith.
With Uncle Jeff.
With Uncle Warren. Anyway, it's on TLC. Go check it out if you want. It's probably interesting. I don't know if it's classy or anything, but I'm sure it's... Isn't that the channel that brought us Honey Boo Boo? I mean, come on.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Let's see. So other great things... Jeff, there's an article this week about missionaries that return home early in the Salt Lake Tribune.
This has been going down for a while, yeah.
In the Trib. And it's discussing sort of some of the ramifications of missionaries who do come home early for whatever reason. So obviously reasons that you would come home early would be, you know, health reasons, things of that, disobedience to mission rules. They did a survey of 348 missionaries who came home early and found that, and this is kind of interesting stats, you know, 40% said it was a personal choice, 36% said it was mental health issues, 34% had physical issues, 12% was unresolved transgression, and 11% was disobedience to mission rules. I think in all of our minds, the unresolved transgression or disobedience to mission rules would have been much higher. The personal choice one, that being 40%, is kind of interesting to me because a mission is, as most of you know, a mission is like the hardest thing about a mission is the psychological warfare that you have with yourself, right? The idea that you're there for 2 years and your first month is so crummy, it's so hard. The thought of doing 23 more of those is just daunting.
I thought it was never going to end. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you really do. And so, like, you have a little bit of empathy for you know, some of this, some of these mind games that play. But at the same time, you know, there are goobers who have lasted through a 2-year mission, like just total jerks. And if they can do it, you can do it. You know, that's how I got through.
But
that's how I got through my first little, you know, 6-month hump.
Yeah. So there is personal choice here. But then you see that a huge chunk, though, have mental health or physical health issues. And that's sort of what this article is trying to touch on, especially in that sort of the struggle that happens with these ones who want to be in the field. Their mental health issues might not be simply, you know, just, hey, I don't like it here. What do I do? But actual depression, actual bipolar disorder, serious issues that can affect them. And the article I like explains, and I never even really thought much about this, things like anxiety and schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, tend to manifest themselves in the later teen years, just physiologically. And that, of course, coincides with when kids go on missions. And so it's a very risky endeavor because you've probably seen this before, Al, I have. Someone who's totally fine, who has no history of anything, and they go on their mission, and all of a sudden they start just like sliding into depression, and it's actual clinical depression. And this happens, but it's good, I think, that we're building better support networks for these missionaries because there is a stigma. I mean, if anyone comes home early, even if it's they're completely worthy and it's actual for the sake of their health, of course there's a stigma. I mean, this article cites poor missionaries who feel like people avoided him. No one wanted to talk to him about it because they felt like he clearly, you know, had sex with some girl in the field and that's why he's home.
And they do the air quotes around back problems.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like, and it's stupid of us as members of the church to assume that if a missionary is home early, it's obviously because they did something wrong.
Now, you know what's interesting? I got a friend of mine here who we met on the mish, and he had been out for a transfer or two, and ended up it was just really hard. He wasn't doing well with the language or any of that. And he ended up being transferred to a stateside mission. Like, he got changed.
Okay.
And out there, while we were all out there, I mean, you're pretty bummed out about it because, like, when you're serving a mission, you're never more aware of the needs of missionaries than when you're out there, right? You're like, man, if we had double the amount of missionaries, we could be in these other cities, we could be doing this other stuff. But no, instead we're like stuck not preaching the gospel to everybody because we don't have the manpower. And so at the time it was kind of a big deal. But since then, he and I we've caught up, we've gone out to lunch a couple of times and remained good friends. And it's so interesting to me, from his point of view, how all that went down, where it was just like, it was kind of the greatest thing that ever happened to him. And he had such a better mission and like loved it. And it was the right choice for him. Whereas me on the sidelines, while I was a missionary still, was sure that he was just ruining everything, right? And so I think there's some opportunity there for us to maybe acknowledge that we don't know everything going on in somebody's life or everything going on with them and their other issues, and sort of let them work it out and trust that they're making the choices that are best for them. I mean, we can give advice, but then our role, again, is just support and love, right?
Yeah. Support and love, and then, of course, take seriously when people have these problems. And I'm glad that we are, as a church...
How do you mean take seriously? Like, well, do you feel like we don't take seriously, like we don't believe that they have medical issues?
I'm speaking more at the actual mission level. I think the church has gotten much better with this, but we've talked about it in the past, some other stories, of the unfortunate tales of missionaries who struggle with physical or mental maladies and who you know, just hit a wall, whose mission presidents won't listen to them. The classic response is, you know, pray harder, be more faithful, fast, and you'll get through this stuff. And that's fine advice, and that could be coming from a mission president who really just might not be grasping the clinical nature of things because of his own, you know, weakness and development. And that's okay. It doesn't mean he's at fault necessarily. But I think we're taking that more seriously at the church level, that these are real issues. It's not a simple buck up and pray harder and stuff's going to get better scenario. And that's really been much more common in the past, unfortunately. And it's getting better, though. And I think we need to ensure that it does get better. Not that we should think people can just bail on missions easily. We need to work through struggles. But, you know, there's people who have legitimate problems and they need to be addressed.
I agree.
As we close, do you want to hear about 10 things you can do with an LDS account?
Yeah, tell me, Jeff.
According to Deseret News, here are the 10 things. Number one, patriarchal blessings. Patriarchal blessings can be lost or destroyed. You can request one. Number 10, food storage. You can get it there with an LDS.org account. You can do your family history with an LDS account. Sorry, I shouldn't say LDS.org, but your broader LDS account works on various URLs. Family search, for example. Use that, even though it's half-baked. Enjoy it. Get a job. I like that it just says that. Get a job.
An LDS.org account will get me a job.
Apparently. Well, no, because we have the employment services of the church, LDSjobs.org. You log in there with the same login you would use for LDS.org, for family search, for the distribution center, any of those things. I will say this, though. I'm sorry. I've worked with the church's employment centers in the past, and I've looked for jobs
on those boards,
and they stink. I mean, and the problem with this is, by and large, the people who work in the employment center are well-intentioned, good people who are either missionaries who are assigned there with not necessarily any experience in the employment sourcing sector, or, as is often the case, like random old CES employees, people who just do a career transition to just get a job doing this. Because you'll go there and they'll say, we're going to give you some hot leads based on what we've talked about today. And you know what they do? They type in a search on Indeed.com based on a simple keyword you've given them, and they print it for you. That's what they give you.
Those dwarves.
So that could get better. So it's well-intentioned, but I don't think it's that valuable. Other things you can do, your church subscriptions to magazines, church news, Ensign, etc. You can create and share. That's what it says. Apparently you can like make a calendar. I don't know. You can volunteer at the Vineyard. You can magnify your calling with leadership training. You can make an I'm a Mormon profile. And you can write an article for a church magazine. But don't be surprised.
What? Why don't we do that, Jeff?
Okay, we can. It's hilarious how much they edit them. Like, comically funny how much they edit them.
Yeah.
I had an aunt who wrote one years ago, and it was finally published later on. And it was this great story of her struggle with a Spanish-speaking branch in Philadelphia. But they basically omitted any of the struggles or the downside or anything like that and just made the whole thing this rosy experience. That's Ensign for you. What can you do? It's okay. We should write one. So do those things, folks, with your LDS.org account. Or just your LDS account, rather. And if I have one request for the broader world of LDS apps...
And you do.
Riddle me this. One, if you were looking on a browser on your phone, many apps are designed so that if you were to click on a link to a story, Android does this. I'm not sure how iOS does it. But it'll prompt you and say, do you want to stay with the link or do you want to open this in a certain app by default? Like if I were to see a Yelp article, for example, in my browser on my Android phone, I could click it, but it would ask me if instead I wanted just to open that in Yelp rather than the mobile website version of Yelp.
Sure.
So that's normal. The church does not do that with its apps, and that would be a nice thing to do. And building upon that, there is still no sharing option on the church's apps. What a great way to do missionary work if when I'm looking at some story, I can hit the share button and send it to others.
No, just highlight, copy, paste, Jeff. What more?
Waste of time. Sharing. One click. Share.
So also, let's see. Up in Harlem, the missionaries had a good idea. They put out chairs. Looks like church chairs from church and milk crates. And they shined people's shoes. And while they had them sitting there, they talked to them about Jesus, about what they were doing there.
Good.
The old bait and switch. I think people knew going in what they were getting into. All right, I'll sit down for a shoe shine. I mean, honestly, if the Jehovah Witnesses wanted to shine my shoes and talk to me about how I was wrong and going to hell, I would do it. I would take it for that shoe shine, and I would do it every time. So I think it's a great idea. Good work.
Yeah, good on them.
It's a good way to be creative. I wish I would have thought of doing something.
I wish I would have, too. The most creative we came up with were chalk drawings or singing. And the singing happened with some companionships out of desperation to meet their contact quota on a Sunday. Like, I kid you not, because they were so big on number quotas. They'd be like, great, we're like 35 contacts down of our goal of 100 on the week. So they'd go to a busy esplanade and just sing to people who would listen and be kind of counting them while they were singing. And they'd say, oh, that was at least like 50 people. Yay. And the hymns have gospel principles in them, you see.
Like, we sang the first vision. Oh, how lovely was the morning.
Exactly. And you're like, I just taught them the first vision. 50 people. Yay. This is what number.
Your mission was full of apostates.
No, my
Jeff.
Mission was good, but this is a good example of how the quest to meet numbers quotas can make missionaries miss the mark, I think.
Yeah, that's fair.
Lastly, interesting story here at KSL called I Didn't Marry My Soulmate. And I share it with all of you, especially people who are looking for their spouse or who are currently married.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm right here.
Whatever it may be. Really, this goes to anybody. The point of this is this author tells a story of how she met somebody at BYU. They laughed their heads off. It was a perfect connection. It was wonderful. She decided to go on a mission. She knew he'd be there when he got back, but he wasn't. He got married a couple of months before she came home. Then she met another guy later on who she thought was an idiot. And this and that. And he was just like this bro with his convertible. But then she kind of saw him actually helping homeless people when she wasn't looking. And she said, great, I'm going to try harder to like this guy. I'm going to try to look beyond the sort of broness on the outside. And then she tells a story of how she married this guy, how it's imperfect, and how she did not marry her soulmate. And how she's learned.
Why didn't she? She should have.
No, the point of this is that she has learned more in hindsight than she could have imagined. That even with the knowledge she had marrying someone, years later, she said, yeah, it's tough, but I made a good choice that I didn't even realize I was making back then. And that's, I think, an important bit of knowledge for all of us to remember, because we do not necessarily fall into our spouse. We make choices. And if you make a good choice and you stick by your choice, and both parties are invested, obviously, there have to be some things at play, you find down the line that it's a better choice than you even realized you were making when you made it. I know plenty of people who might have had doubts when they were getting married or just felt like, yeah, I'm good with this. It's good. And then it's only...
It's going to be good.
Yeah, it's going to be good. But then later on, they've told me, like, you know what? It's a lot... This was a better decision than I even thought I was making when I made it. And that doesn't mean it's a... You know, that's not a bad way of saying things.
Yeah, which happens 50% of the time. The other 50% of the time, they get a divorce, Jeff. But, they made such a miserable choice, and then they lose half of everything.
But is it that they made a miserable choice, or which does happen, or that divorces happen oftentimes because parties drift and people cease to work on the relationship and get
they
through things.
Fell out of love.
We suffer from a culture of convenience, and when we decide it's just not worth the hassle anymore, we just get divorced. I'm not saying that
this woman sounds like she's just trying to placate. The fact that she didn't get the first guy, and she's like, well, now I got whoever, and I guess I'll learn to love him.
Nah.
And everybody should think that I'm great because of that. Let me write an article.
And also, to answer her question, no one has a soulmate. Soulmates don't exist. President Kimball said so.
But now we question everything we ever
did. It's not like there's some magical connection we have with someone when it said, wait a minute, we were foreordained in the pre-existence.
What if you stayed up all night laughing and giggling, Jeff? What if that was the case?
Then obviously I would think that that individual was clearly supposed to be the one to whom I should be betrothed.
Still the one. All right.
Thank you,
well,
thank you, Shania.
Jeff, it's been delightful. We got to wrap this up. We've been long-winded today. I'm sorry, everybody. You don't want to listen to this. You're welcome to send us an email, contact at This Week in Mormons. We love chitter chatter with you. And also go visit thisweekinmormons.com. You can leave a comment there and we will read it and respond in like.
Yeah. Do we say Facebook?
Nope. Facebook.com/thisweekinmormons and also Twitter.com@therealtwin is who we are on there.
And subscribe to our YouTube channel. Subscribe to our Pinterest. Join us for Sunday School Bonanza. We're wrapping up Old Testament, getting ready for the Old Testament, where we get ready for gospel doctrine lessons. And join us, please, for the gospel study sesh. Currently, we are talking about forgiveness, something I've learned a lot about during the many years I've known Al.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, man.
All right, buddy.
Jeff, what a treat.
Thank you.
All right, see you, buddy.
See you, Al. Thanks, folks. Appreciate you listening in. We'll talk to you next week. This has been This Week in Mormons. We'll see you later.
Appreciate ya.
Bye.
Okay, so you're Brad Pitt. That don't impress me much. So you got the looks, but have you got the touch? Now don't get me wrong, yeah, I think you're all right. But that won't keep me warm in the middle of the night. That don't impress me much.
Go back and say, hey, baby. You're doing okay. You're like, he said okay. He said okay.